morning and welcome to episode 164 of Taking the Charge with you from Toronto, Canada. I'm David Hine of Hine News up in the great white north of Northern America. I am up here doing a little bit of, vacation sort of. Good to have you on the show. Thanks for stopping by once again. Fantastic. Thanks for listening to the show. Going to not really talk a lot about actual games going on this week, and actually do not have a interview with a coach or a player or a manager or general manager, CEO or anything like that, but something entirely different. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. So I guess first of all, take care of the housekeeping. Basically, if you want to get in touch with the show, easiest way would be on Twitter, and I'm at Hine News, HEINNEWS. You can check out the Facebook group, just put in Taking the Charge Podcast, and we will, of course, let you in, but we want to be at the doors when you come around. So there's also the email address. That is HEINNEWS. hinenews@gmx.te, and hinenews.com is obviously the website. So with all that out of the way, I guess first of all, I wanted to talk some FIBA today. I know we've been talking other things and not talking other things, but do want to kind of get to some of the ongoings of the past couple of weeks off the court that we would usually address. I wanted to start off with the teams, the countries were announced that would be that have shown interest in hosting one of the three 16 Olympic qualifying tournaments to decide the three spots for the three final spots for the 2016 Olympic tournament. And those will be held, those three tournaments, each with six teams, will be held from July 4th to July 10th, 2016, next summer, ahead of the Rio Olympics. Those countries are, I guess I'll break down by continent. So from Europe, they are the Czech Republic, Germany, Greece, Israel, Italy, Serbia, and Turkey. Then there is Iran and Philippines from Asia, and Mexico from FIBA Americas. So 10 in total. And the three countries that did not qualify for the Olympic tournament are Germany, Israel, and Turkey. So they are that hosting one of those qualifying tournaments, the OQTs, is the only way for them to still have a chance to reach the Olympics. FIBA did announce some of their evaluation criteria that they'll kind of take into account when they decide who they're going to select as the three hosts. And they've said player welfare. So they define it as the best possible conditions for players. Stakeholder experience, so event, first-class event for spectators, teams, media broadcasters. I guess that's also venues filled to capacity. There's also state-of-art facilities and infrastructure. Legacy, which they define as event must bring benefits for basketball in the country, prestige and credit to the host nation and FIBA, as well as being support to the strategic ambitions of the entire basketball family, and commercial model. And with that one, they say the event must be based on sound commercial and promotional initiatives and be financially successful. So those bids have to be filed to FIBA by Wednesday, November 11th. So that's a week from today. So that's the day of the next show. And kind of looking at FIBA's comments in the past, that they really would kind of like to have three the three tournaments on three different continents, if that's possible. I would imagine that the three hosts will be Philippines, Turkey, and Mexico. Philippines, I think everybody knows that the facility in Manila is a fantastic facility, and that they will obviously pack that thing with the great support that the Philippines always get. So I think that's pretty much a given in my eyes. Plus, they also did not get the 2019 FIBA Basketball World Cup, so I think that's another advantage for them, that they sort of, not quite saying that FIBA owes them, but that they've shown an ability to host events in the past, the FIBA Asia 2013, and so this would be just the 1/16 tournament, six team tournament, I think would work really well there, and so it seems to me that's pretty much a lock. With everything being Turkey and in basketball at the moment, it seems Turkish Airlines EuroLeague, FS Doğuş, there's just so much money coming from Turkey. Also, Turkey, Istanbul have fantastic facilities. It just would seem to me that Turkey is another given. The third one, I think, if it's not another European, that it would be Mexico. Mexico showed that they can put on a great event at FIBA Americas. We had Alvaro Martin on a couple months ago talking from FIBA Americas, and talked about how great the atmosphere there in Mexico was. So I can imagine that those three countries, as long as they hand in a pretty decent bid, would probably be the ones that get the nod. Not sure exactly when those will be announced. Just kind of taking a look at I don't know when the bids have to be in by next week, but not sure exactly when the next board meeting is. Imagine that by the end of the year, probably should know more. So that's the one thing I wanted to talk about. Another thing I wanted to address was the new FIBA tournament that they want to kind of put together for European basketball. They are looking to call it the Basketball Champions League, sort of a replacement for the EuroLeague. As FIBA and various officials from European basketball met in Geneva, in me actually, in Switzerland by Geneva, to talk about this. And so you had the FIBA Europe president, Turgay Demirel, as well as FIBA Secretary General Patrick Baumann. Then you also had clubs like Fenerbahce, Maccabi, Olympiacos, Madrid there. EuroLeague was represented by Jordi Bertomeu and Edward Scott. And you also had the presidents of the national federations from Greece, Italy, Spain, Turkey, as well as IOC member Alex Gilady, who's also the vice president, senior vice president of NBC Sports, and Eric Thorier from the FIBA Central Board. And they were talking about an offer made to the clubs in July, where they proposed the Basketball Champions League, which would be a 16 team competition, jointly owned, managed, and governed by the clubs and FIBA and investors, 50-50, and they would be looking to launch this starting next season, or is it 16-17. So the 16 clubs would be guaranteed $30 million per season, split up. There are a couple of charts out there with how much money would be broken down. And the original plan had guaranteed spots going to 8 teams, and those being Barcelona, Real Madrid, Olympiacos, Panathinaikos, Maccabi, CSKA Moscow, FS, and Fenerbahce. The four more guaranteed spots would go to the champions of France, Germany, Italy, and Lithuania. And the final four remaining spots would go through a qualification round with teams from 28 national leagues with at least 23 more national champions. Yeah, there's been a lot of fireworks on Twitter, on social media, about, you know, the size of it, what's going to happen to the clubs that don't make it, you know, what about, you know, the distribution of the money. Financial fair play will be in place, and I think this is probably actually one of the easiest ways for financial fair play to actually be put into effect on the European scale. I mean, if you want to play in this competition, and having the commitment from the Fenerbahce's and Olympiacos and Maccabi and CSKA, you know, kind of gives FIBA sort of makes clear to everybody that, you know, that the big boys are on board on this, and they're only going to be allowed to play in this if they go by financial fair play. So I think it's probably actually the easiest way to get this put into effect. Very interesting is that nobody from Germany, from the BBL or from the German Federation, according to the FIBA announcement, the FIBA release, were actually at the talks. Haven't received actually confirmation whether or not they were just not listed, or actually that they were not there. Don't really know why that is the case, but did find that interesting. Think that it's that, of course, having a, you know, going from 32 to 16 teams, is kind of a downer for the, you know, for the teams that, you know, that might not make it, but in this new format, but would have been able to get there, would have been able to get there under the current format. It seems also, you know, something is, they still have to figure out what's going to be left over. You know, what happens to the teams that don't make it to the Champions League? Are they going to have, like a Euro Cup competition? Is that going to still survive? I can't imagine that they would leave Euro League and make it the second, competition in the country. In the continent, sort of like the Euro Cup of the current present Euro Cup. Can't imagine they would do that. So lots of questions up in the air, and you know, I think that streamlining it, making it smaller, is not a bad thing. Less is not always a bad thing. I think it's you know, the exclusivity, you know, also could lend lend to the competition actually being better. So I don't necessarily say it's a bad competition. I think depending on the format of these qualification round, you know, maybe you have a best of three at the beginning of the season, and kind of let these the other countries get their domestic leagues, the other clubs get their domestic competition underway, and kind of get you know, slowly but surely get into their season, and whereas do this qualification round at the beginning. Still, like I said, plenty of details unannounced, you know, they're still at the beginning stages of this. But you know, to be honest, this is going to happen in some form or another. You've seen FIBA basically throw down the hammer and say, "We're doing this. We're doing these things." And so this is just something else that's going to happen, and I think now it's up to the current EuroLeague teams, the leagues, the federations, to sit down with FIBA and say, listen, okay, we'll be on board with it, but you know, maybe we shouldn't start it next year, maybe we should start it the year after, maybe it shouldn't be this format, but it should be this format. But, you know, FIBA saying, you know, we're going to do this basically puts the ball in the clubs and the federation's court and says, listen, get your house in order and figure out what we're going to do, or I'm just we're just going to tell you what to do. And so it's not an entirely bad thing. And I think it, you know, it leads to something actually being done. Of course, you know, anytime it's you know, something new comes around, people are going to say they don't like it. You know, maybe it shouldn't be 16, maybe it should be 20, and maybe it shouldn't be called the Champions League because that's what the football team is. It's not a bad thing, and I don't think it's, you know, how many of these, you know, that's you know, how many of the teams that haven't made it to the EuroLeague Final Four are from one of the non big clubs. You know, that's, you know, these it's all nice to talk about parity, but you know, what's the, you know, how much parity actually happens? You know, how many times does a club, you know, you see it in the final in the NCAA, but that's, you know, that's one-off games, and you have, especially with the quarterfinal playoffs, with this best of five, nobody is not going to make it there. I mean, the last non-big club team, I mean, you can't even say it was Montepaschi because in 2010. 11 because they were huge. They, you know, they made it to a number of Final Fours. You know, maybe like one of the Spanish, you know, Malaga, Baskonia in 6 and 7, but they weren't, you know, maybe Partizan in 2009-10 season was maybe one of the last non-big clubs that made it to a Final Four. Before that, you know, there's so much, there, you know, you could talk about parity, but there's none. And so I think this actually, I believe the quarterfinal playoffs will be best of three. See if I can find that really quick. Yes, best of three, with the winners then going to the Final Four. And it's a lot easier to win a best of three to knock off a big club than to go through and have to win quarterfinals best of five against a Real Madrid or some of these other teams. So, you know, people say all these other teams, it's great to have them in the EuroLeague, but, you know, they never really do anything. And so in that effect, it's really, I don't know how much is really going to change, how much would change down the road, you know, with the smaller, quote, smaller or surprise clubs, knocking on the door of the Final Four. So, yeah, there's, you know, obviously this is not going to go away, and, you know, I could talk more about it, but, I think what I'll try to do is I'll try to find somebody over the next couple of weeks, once there's a couple more details out and more is known about the whole thing, have somebody on and we can kind of banter back and forth about it and see what other people think. So with that, I'm going to move over to the interview. And again, like I said, this is probably somebody that nobody's ever heard of. And it's probably something, a company that very few people have heard of, though the previous name of the company, people might have heard of. The interview is with Joe Procopio, who's the Chief Product Officer at Automated Insights. Automated Insights used to be known as StatSheet, and which, you know, produced automated copy for among other things, also fantasy football, but other things as well. And so they, this company, basically, the reason I came about this company was that AP The Associated Press, the American news agency, the biggest American news agency, decided to collaborate with Automated Insights to have automated game reports. There was a story on AP that they were going to have this automated this company come up with automated, basically robot stories about some of the lower level collegiate sports. So Division I baseball, Division I women's basketball, Division II and Division III football, and Division II and Division III men's basketball. And that would add thousands of stories to the Associated Press wire, and then also give them a chance to cover some of these sports that otherwise wouldn't be covered. And so basically Automated Insights turns data into written reports but done by a machine, done by, you know, a computer. And so I wanted to talk about this. I wanted to get somebody from Automated Insights on the show. And so I talked to Joe Procopio. You'll be hearing a lot of, you know, algorithms and, you know, the word algorithms used. Human sounding is another thing that comes about. And it's not only AP that's doing it. It's also Yahoo is another one. So enjoy this. Open your mind and get away from basketball for a while. Take this little trip down journalism lane and enjoy my chat with Joe Procopio. Okay, so on the show this week, not necessarily someone who many people in the basketball world would expect to hear from, but we'll come to the connection to the basketball world in a couple minutes. Joe Procopio, the Chief Product Officer at Automated Insights. Joe, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem at all. Great, thank you for having me.
Okay, so the reason why I kind of wanted to reach out to you guys, Automated Insights, was a story I read that Associated Press, obviously one of the leading news agencies in the world, and I guess the NCAA as well, were working with your technology to come up with automated game reports, game stories about some of the lower level sports that are kind of hard to cover if you want to send a reporter to a game. Maybe just as a background, let's kind of go back a little bit to give us some details as to actually what Automated Insights is, and then we can kind of move on from there.
Absolutely. So Automated Insights is a startup in Durham, North Carolina, and we were founded on the hypothesis that we could automate human-sounding narrative at scale using nothing but data, and in almost all cases bypass human interaction. So this would allow us to write stories where no human could or would write a story. So for instance, in the example you just gave, when we're doing these reports, which is a partnership with the Associated Press and the NCAA, we're doing them mainly for sports and divisions where the AP doesn't have stringers or writers. That way they can cover thousands of teams at schools across the country without the expense of sending a journalist and having that journalist write the story. And the story can also be written instantly, immediately, as soon as the data is available. So we started in sports, actually. We were doing automated recaps, previews, players of the week, top 25 for every single college and pro basketball, football, and baseball program in the country. This was generating a lot of interest, and in 2011, I believe, we changed our name to Automated Insights, raised some money, and decided to take our focus from sports, actually off of sports, and be able to write narratives for any structured set of data, whether that be in finance, marketing, healthcare, e-commerce, you name it, we will write that story. One of our biggest early successes was with Yahoo Fantasy Football. And that's a great example where no matter how many writers you would get, they would never be able to access the data and write recaps of fantasy football matchups. But we were able to do that, and it increased engagement for Yahoo in an extremely dramatic fashion. People would return to the website to read the recap, which was another great advertising opportunity because heretofore, this content had not existed. They would also share these recaps on social networks, Facebook, Twitter, and it provided a huge viral element for Yahoo. Shortly after that, we created a partnership with the Associated Press, and our initial partnership was to automatically write articles about quarterly earnings reports for major public companies. And it's earnings season right now. In fact, both Twitter and Apple reported their quarterly results after the close of the bell yesterday. And we wrote those stories on them within seconds of that data hitting the street. What this allowed the Associated Press to do was go from covering 400 companies per quarter to well over 4,500 companies per quarter, all without human interaction. Now, in the Associated Press's case, we do allow for human editors to be able to access some of those articles. So, for example, Apple or Twitter, where you have quotes from Tim Cook or Jack Dorsey, the editors at the Associated Press are able to stop our automated articles, insert those quotes, and then push them out to their 1,600-plus distribution partners. So even when there is human interaction involved, we've done all the heavy lifting, the data science, the big math, and the human writer is left to do what they do best, which is the hard journalism, the getting the quotes, the analysis of what those numbers mean for the company. And you can still get that story out within minutes as opposed to, say, an hour or two. So based on the success of that partnership, the AP came to us and saw the opportunity to cover Division I college baseball, Division II and III college basketball and football, Division I women's basketball, places where you don't normally send a reporter or becomes cost prohibitive to send a reporter. So we're going to be doing writing all the articles in human-sounding fashion for those sports, and that will expand to other sports. And, of course, we're looking with our ownership now with StatsInc of covering other sports worldwide, soccer, cricket, rugby, sports that have a huge followership but don't have enough focus in the United States to get every article written for every match.
The company you mentioned that it's kind of changed its direction and not direction but its scope. Beforehand, I believe you was StatSheet. Is that right?
Yes, we were StatSheet, and that was the world's largest collection of college basketball data, hugely popular with both schools and fans of the college basketball teams. And I was brought on board to help do the artificial intelligence and the design for automating the content from all this data. And that's where we got started.
Okay. I guess without giving too many secrets, because you say it's more or less instantaneous. I mean, as soon as the information comes in, you can have it, churned out. What is the, let's say in layman's terms, what would the automated insights description be of how automated insights works in writing a game report, for example? Like I said, without giving
too
many
secrets. That's a really good question. I can't answer that. I've answered it a bunch of times and I haven't given away a secret yet. Basically, what separates us from something like MailMerge or QuakeBot, that LA Times, U.S. Geological Survey partnership, where they can instantly report on earthquakes as soon as a tremor is felt, with sensors. We differ from that a little bit in the sense that those are templates. Basically, what they do is they take the same words, they stuff in the appropriate data in the appropriate points, and then churn that out very quickly. Well, that was sort of the original automated content. What separates us and makes us unique and makes us allows us to be much more robust, human-sounding, and insightful is the fact that we eschew templates. We do everything algorithmically. So we get new data into the system. Say a game finishes and we get the data for that game. We lump that in with historical data for, say, the season or 10 seasons ago, all time when we can get it. And in fact, our baseball data goes all the way back to the late 1800s. And we combine it with third-party data so we can incorporate things like geolocation or weather for that particular game and add a more human element that way. We start running algorithms before the first word is written. So we'll define who our audience is, what the tone of the article is, what's the lead of that article, and that can be different based on different outcomes. So, for example, if two teams are playing and the championship is on the line, that's the lead of that article. But if that's not the case and maybe somebody breaks a single season record in that game, that might be the lead of the article. So we determine a lead algorithmically. We then go through the data. We find all the insights that may be interesting to the reader, and we prioritize those based on their interest level to the reader and how they fit into the lead. And then we start writing out those insights in that priority order. So you get all the most important information in the article first. We then use algorithms to make sure our language is right, and each article has its own lexicon. So our sports articles are completely different and use a completely different language, you know, words, sentences, phrases, terminology, verbs, adjectives, what have you, than our finance articles or our marketing articles. And then we also use algorithms to edit as we write. So we make sure we're taking into account things like good and proper and human-sounding sentence flow and paragraph flow. We'll even do things like if we mention a player's name in the article, we'll mention that player by first and last name the first time. And then for subsequent mentions, we'll only mention that player by last name, unless, of course, there are two players in the article with the same last name. Our technology is smart enough to know that we have to reference both of those players by first name, last name throughout the article. This is especially helpful when, say, the New York Yankees are playing the New York Mets. We make sure that we don't refer to either team as New York in that situation. So that all gets cranked out. It takes some setup, depending on how that article needs to come out. But we've even sort of removed that. Last week, we launched our new Wordsmith product to the public so that people can upload their own data and create their own automated content. It's sort of a slimmed-down version of what we do, exposing some of that functionality so people can create their own automated reports and do, you know, thousands or millions of their own reporting in an automated fashion. But that's, you know, the long and short of how it works. It then gets delivered to whoever our customer is, whether that be Yahoo, the Associated Press, or some other customer.
And how many people do you think have actually read stories? How many people would you estimate have read stories written by automated insights?
Great question. Last year, 2014, we produced over 1 billion stories.
1 billion with a B.
1 billion with a B, and this year we're going to top that. For instance, with fantasy football, we can easily do over 200 million stories in a single season. We have more than one fantasy football client. But we estimate that those stories, we get a much higher engagement rate with our stories, because I like to say, instead of us writing one article that gets read by a million people, We write 1 million articles, but each one of those is distinctly and uniquely important to one person. So they're much more likely to read it. If the article is about your fantasy team or your stock portfolio, that gives you much more an incentive to be up to date and read that and engage with that article, because it gives you the exact information that you need. And most times that information is actionable. You can take action based on that information. You can sell your stock. You could change your fantasy lineup. So that creates a much higher engagement than traditional journalism, traditional articles produces. We've also had a study done by Dr. Christer Klarwall at the University of Karlstad in Sweden, where he concluded, based on this experiment he did, I'll go through the experiment just a little bit. He took NFL games that we had done recaps of, and he compared those to NFL, the same games with articles as written by human journalists published in newspapers here in the United States. He gave copies of those to his graduate-level journalism students and asked them to determine which ones were written by a machine and which ones were written by a human and why. Well, the journalism students got it wrong, completely wrong, leading Dr. Klarwall to conclude that not only is our content indistinguishable from human-sounding content, in many cases it can be deemed as more credible and trustworthy based on the fact that there is no human bias in the article. So people tend to, we produce a vast amount of content, people tend to engage with it more often because it speaks directly to them. And because there's no bias, they tend to place more trust in the content we produce.
You say, I've often heard you just over the, you know, the brief time we've been talking, say human sounding. And if you read articles about, you know, the reports and whatnot, you know, there's kind of this robot journalist comment being thrown around. Just hearing this, it sounds scary, I guess, might be a word to kind of describe it. What are your thoughts about all this? I mean, thinking that, okay, me as a journalist, you know, I go and sit and write down, writing story and the computer not only gets it out quicker, but is also a better article. I mean, it kind of it sounds very intimidating. Sounds pretty scary.
Don't be scared. actually, we've been hearing that since the beginning, right? Ever since we started to build some traction and a little bit of hype around the company, we would do interviews, both the founder Robbie Allen and myself, and that question came up every time. And I can report to you, in 5 years, we have never replace the journalist. In fact, we've hired 5. So we're plus 5 right now on journalism careers. I gave a talk at the Tao Center for Digital Journalism at the Columbia School of Journalism last year. Another talk at UNC Chapel Hill just a couple of weeks ago to their journalism students. They see this coming, and they look at automated content as a tool that they can use, as another source. Lou Ferrara, the former VP at the Associated Press, who brought us aboard, stated often in public that what we do frees his journalists up to actually do their job. If anything, we're replacing low-level data scientists or removing the data science, the hard math part, out of what the journalist has to do to get to the heart of the story. So much as, I mean, telephones, email, the internet has sped up the communication for the journalist to get the facts that they need to be able to produce the story, this is going to crunch the data. And a lot of journalism is getting more and more data-based as we move forward into, you know, this era of big data, that we're providing a tool for the journalist to be able to put that data into plain English. And much like we're doing with the Associated Press, they can take what we do, add to it, edit it, delete chunks out, put in quotes, contextual information that may not be in the data, like an SEC investigation or a marital affair, all that stuff that's still going on today. There will always be a need for humans to be able to write these kinds of articles. Like I said before, we do our best in situations where humans can't or won't write an article, where either time or security make it prohibitive for a human to get in and write that article. And as we see advancements in big data and the Internet of Things, there are going to be a lot more situations where humans don't want to write an article. So say in your home, if you have a smartphone, a smart TV, a smart thermostat, and a smart refrigerator, these things are all talking to one another. Well, we can provide you a daily or weekly, a monthly report detailing how your home is doing. How much money are you saving on your energy bills? Are there any things you need to watch out for? Are components going on your refrigerator? Should you turn your thermostat down another degree because the weather's been nicer than we've thought? So in situations where humans wouldn't or would not want to go find those kind of insights and put them in plain English for somebody to easily understand, that's where automated content works best.
You mentioned Wordsmith Beta, which is kind of the software now, sort of the simpler software available for the general public. How does it work? If somebody wants to try it, is there a period where you can try it out? Is it pretty self-explanatory how to enter the data? And I mean, pretty user-friendly. Talk maybe a couple words about Wordsmith Beta, which I guess is really fresh new on the market.
Yes, we launched it last Tuesday. The results have been astronomical. We've had thousands signed up for the beta, and some of the things they want to do with it are frankly just awesome. Some great ideas coming in that they've told us, here's what I want to do with automated content in Wordsmith. Anyone can join the beta, which is running now through the end of the year. You do have to be accepted into the beta program. You can get started at automatedinsights.com, and that will lead you right to the Wordsmith beta. Basically, how it works is there's a getting started guide. We have training. We have support for this product. But you bring your data, and right now we're working with CSV data. So anything that you can export from, say, Excel or a database into a CSV, comma separated value file, you can then upload into Wordsmith. It then gives you a really slick, beautifully designed editor by which you can use what looks more like a templated approach to create your article by branching off. Now, you're not going to be able to create corporate earnings reports, or maybe you can if you spend enough time with it. It's not meant for that. It's meant for the people in jobs where frequent reports are required. And some of those reports say the same things with different data, may have to go to different people or a different audience each day or week or month, basically taking all the drudgery out of creating those reports so that the report creator can focus on the data and what those reports mean and the analysis of that data. So Wordsmith will grow and evolve. This is our first crack at it, and it's gone well beyond our expectations in terms of its popularity, how much people want this. So as the demand grows, the product will grow, and eventually people will be able to do, our hope is anyway, that people will be able to do on their own what we do today for, say, the Associated Press or Yahoo or whomever, because we do think that's coming, and we think this is the future.
And what do you want to do? What does Automated Insights want to do? I mean, now they've made this available. Obviously, you can't just rest on your laurels. What do you see as the next step for the company?
I think we keep going down this path, right? So we provide the product to make automated content possible to the masses. I think there are huge opportunities for us as we get more data coming online, whether that be sensor data, Internet of Things type data, crowdsourced data, social data. It's fascinating, the things. We have a research department here, and I absolutely love those meetings because we think about things that people would never think of, just as 5 years ago when we said, hey, let's automate this data and create 800 websites that are, you know, automatically populated 5 times per day with human-sounding content. That just seemed insane 5 years ago. And we've got the same sort of insanity coming out of our research division. So there's a lot of opportunity for us, but our focus right now is to get this product into the hands of as many people as we can, keep building it, keep evolving it, make it better and better, and, you know, start a new wave, a new revolution in automated content for the layperson.
All right. Fantastic. Joe Procopio, why don't you tell people how they can get more information, social media, the website, everything, you know, pimp your product.
Absolutely. Our website is automatedinsights.com. You'll go there to find out about Wordsmith, the beta, and some of the cool new things that we're doing with the Wordsmith product. You can also follow us at A Insights, just the letter A Insights. You can follow me at J Proco. It's a short version of my name since it's kind of hard to pronounce.
All right, fantastic. Joe, thank you very much for coming on the show and giving us some insight into automated insights.
Well, thank you. That was a lot of fun.
Okay. Automated Insights produced over 1 billion stories in 2014, and they'll top that this year. That's amazing. I don't even know if I really want to know how many automated stories I've read, how many reports I've read. But you know, thanks to Joe Procopio for coming on and sharing that my life as my career as a journalist, as a human journalist, is still viable, and I can still afford to be around. That's exactly what I was hoping to hear. Yeah, I was hoping to hear you know, the breakdown, how it's done. You know, what people, you know, how good it is, and that the fact that, you know, journalism students couldn't even tell the difference, it really doesn't surprise me. So fantastic stuff, and I think we're going to leave it with that. Thanks again to Joe Procopio for coming on the show. Thanks for listening. The last thing, obviously, is to let you know what you are going to be listening to. The song's called If You Want It, and it's by TV Girl, and of course, it's available on freemusicarchive.org. So until next week, when I'll be back in Germany, enjoy and enjoy the hoops.
Hi, this is Patrick Bauman, Secretary General of FIBA, and you're listening to Taking the Charge. Enjoy.